I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Democrats own everything in Washington state, even the judges. Plus, UW canceling an appearance by far-left activist Hassan Piker, and two former NBA players say they will enter the WNBA draft. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I say it a million times. How do you win against people who have no moral compass, no sense of right and wrong? And how do you win when the decks are stacked against you? And you guys know me. Like, I don't need a Republican majority in Washington state. I don't need a red wave on the West Coast. I could not care any less about the two political parties as institutions. I really don't. My big thing is divided government. Stopping the crazy people from pushing crazy policies. Stopping our state government from just violating the state constitution and getting all their cronies and allies appointed to little positions where they can ruin our lives every step of the way. So on Friday, there was a hearing happening in regard to the initiative that will be on your ballot if you're a Washington state voter in November to repeal the unconstitutional income tax. Now, the court hearing was about the PIID, and it gets a little bit in the weeds, but this is a public investment impact disclosure. So remember we talked about this, the Attorney General's office writes it. It's something Democrats cooked up like 3 years ago because conservatives were starting to run a bunch of initiatives to repeal taxes. Conservatives don't really like taxes. Nobody really likes taxes, right? But Democrats want to spend a bunch of money. And so they saw that conservatives were starting to run initiatives to repeal more taxes. And so they got behind the scenes. And they came up with their little strategies to try to make sure that those initiatives would be unsuccessful. And they've done a number of things. You know, they tried to pass laws that would make it more difficult to just go out and collect signatures for initiatives and referendum, which is your right under the state constitution. But then this thing that they did that's very nefarious and was really transparent at the time was they said, okay, if you're going to try to repeal a tax, then we get to put a little line under it on the ballot that says, yeah, but kittens and children will die if you do this, essentially. And so this was their way of putting their hand on the scale because Washington voters, as blue as this state is, they don't like taxes. If there is an anti-tax measure on the ballot, they'll pass it. So Democrats had to cook the books and they had to put their finger on the scale. So they added this little PIID. It's like, okay, oh, if we repeal the income tax, then all these bad things will happen. So I mentioned the PIID language written by the Attorney General's office came out, I believe it was last week or the week before. So we knew what the ballot language would look like for you in November. So it says Initiative Measure IP26645 concerns state and local taxes. This measure would repeal a 9.9% tax on annual individual income over $1 million, prohibit taxes measured by individual income and taxes on individual income or the receipt of individual income, and it would define income. So that would have been left there if it weren't for this little PIID that they added that says this measure would decrease funding for public K-12 education, higher education, and human services. And so now a populace of people that typically would vote to repeal a tax, now they see those little buzzwords. Oh, I don't want to take money away from kids. I don't want to take money away from health care for the needy or whatever it is, even though the new income tax on quote-unquote millionaires doesn't even start collecting revenue until 2029. And so you're arguing that it'll decrease funding for something for funding that hasn't even come through yet at some point in the future, and you're just guessing how much that will be. So there were two legal challenges that popped up immediately after this language was released. Two legal challenges that popped up having to do with this PIID, but from separate people. So a guy named Arthur West. Arthur West is like a open government advocate. You might recognize his face. We got a picture of him here. And then one of them was from Brian Haywood of Let's Go Washington. So Arthur West's challenge was more broad. He's basically challenging the constitutionality of PIIDs in general, saying, well, you know, if you're going to have these, then when people go to sign an initiative, then that language should be on the initiative at the time they sign it. So that was his legal challenge. And then Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood's legal challenge was specific to what I just read you. They don't feel like that statement is accurate because you're basically telling people it's going to cut funding for things it's not even funding yet, right? So both of them had court hearings on their challenges on Friday. Arthur West's was in the morning. And then Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood's was going to be in the afternoon, okay? So they're in Thurston County Superior Court, Arthur West's case is. He is arguing his case before Thurston County Superior Court Judge Chris Lanise. Now, Chris Lanise has a reputation as being a little bit of an activist judge. But I will tell you, 15 years covering the courts, I have never seen a judge behave in the way that Judge Lanise did during this hearing with Arthur West. Here it is.
This has hot button items that are going to, that it says are going to have reduced funding, even when that's not the case, and even when the legislature is the only one who can reduce funding for these hot button items. And then Griswold.
Aren't initiatives that seek to reduce taxes without any reference to the impacts of that not neutral themselves? No one wants to pay taxes. Right. Yep. But if we all just pretend we don't have to reduce any services as a result of those cut taxes, isn't that not neutral? Isn't that only showing half the picture to voters? Isn't identifying what's going to be cut what's making it neutral in the end because it shows both sides of the ledger?
Well, the OFM's fiscal statement is neutral. I don't have any objection to that. They want to append that.
How long is the statement?
It's significantly longer, but
how much space is the is allotted for the PIID?
Well, the PIID is one sentence, but the PIID is not neutral. And
why?
Because it says stuff that isn't true. Okay. It says these services will be cut and the legislature cuts those. And in this case, there's not even going to be any money reduced.
So then can we ever have a PIID? Because if we don't know what's going to be cut, again, aren't we back to where we started?
Again, I believe, yes, that's the facial challenge.
So this is just inherently all PIDs are lies and not neutral.
No, the ones where they insert what's going to be cut, the ones where the revenue is targeted are different.
So unless the initiative itself specifies specifically the cuts,
yeah,
they're lies. If they're identifying some cuts. Because it's not part of the.
If they are saying that this initiative will produce cuts in specific services that do not flow from the initiative, yes, the legislature makes cuts.
So we can continue the downward regressive spiral of the tax scheme in Washington State by never having these issues identified in the initiatives instead of just saying, we're cutting taxes. No one wants to think about what's getting cut. We're just cutting taxes, spending. We're going to pass the buck to someone else.
And we're supposed to believe that he's a neutral arbitrator on the issue of taxation. I mean, let me listen to that clip again.
No one wants to pay taxes, right? Yep. But if we all just pretend we don't have to reduce any services as a result of those cut taxes, isn't that not neutral? Isn't that only showing half the picture to voters? So we can continue the downward regressive spiral of the tax scheme in Washington State by never having these issues identified in the initiatives instead of just saying, we're cutting taxes. No one wants to think about what's getting cut. We're just cutting taxes, spending. We're going to pass the buck to someone else.
Continue the downward regressive spiral of our state's tax system. That is a phrase straight out of the Democrat talking points. I mean, that's like a campaign slogan for them in trying to stop the repeal of the income tax. And we've got a judge in a robe who's uttering it during a hearing, a critical hearing on the language of that initiative that will go to voters in November. And his words aside, can we just watch? We'll get rid of the sound on it. His mannerisms. Watch his mannerisms. He's like jumping out of his chair. He looks angry. And then he just starts flailing around. If this weren't a highly esteemed judge, I might even suggest it looks like he's on narcotics. But of course, I'd never suggest that a judge is on drugs. I'm just saying that he's exhibiting some of the mannerisms of someone who's high out of their mind on drugs. That's the first thing I thought when I watched that. Now, again, I wouldn't accuse a highly respected judge of such a thing, but the mannerisms are bizarre. The mannerisms are just as bizarre as him using progressive talking points about taxes during a hearing where he's supposed to be an independent arbitrator of the issues at hand. And then, definitely, if you're ever in front of Judge Chris Lanise, definitely don't use the phrase gypsy fortune teller.
There's no way other than using gypsy fortune teller type.
Also, some people would consider that a slur, Mr. West, so please don't use that expression. How about we just avoid identifying an ethnic class of people at all, Mr. West?
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I mean, how fast that he was on him for that. Oh, that's a slur. Gypsy? Is gypsy a slur? I mean, it just shows he is just a leftist, unhinged activist. That's what he is, and he's making decisions about what is going to be on your ballot in November. And of course, this is, you know, he used to work for the AG's office. Not a surprise. And this is one of the big consequences of losing elections, is you've got people, and I think he ran for the bench, but this is the funnel, right? It's like, oh, you're in these private law firms, you get hired by the AG's office, then you're going to get a seat on the bench and Democrats will push for you and then you'll end up on the state Supreme Court and then they own basically every aspect of everything. Not a surprise that he denied Arthur West's emergency injunction.
Mr. West has not met his burden of establishing a likelihood of success on the merits for the constitutionality concerns. And for the statutory review, I am denying his request to alter the language.
Now, here's what's interesting and gets even more aggravating. So Arthur West isn't connected to Let's Go Washington at all. He's a government, open government advocate. And I admire some of the work that he's done, definitely. I don't want to knock anyone who's trying to make the government more accountable and more transparent. But he, you know, did this lawsuit separately. But what transpired during it is this judge basically said, let him, this Arthur West guy, make arguments about the actual language issue. So not just the overarching issue of a PID, but the actual verbiage that's going to be on the ballot. And then the judge ruled on all of it in the Arthur West case and the Let's Go Washington case, where they were going to argue against this very misleading PID. It was canceled. They're like, we don't need to hear that because we just heard this Arthur West guy and he made his arguments. He has nothing to do with Let's Go Washington. He doesn't represent them in any form or fashion. So Let's Go Washington's challenge to the fiscal impact statement was DOA. They didn't even get a hearing. It's unreal. I don't even know how that's legal. So Let's Go Washington put out a statement about this. They said, Judge Lanise claimed that because West was arguing a case generally about PIIDs, he was required to make a ruling on I-645's PIID at that moment. West, who's not an attorney for Let's Go Washington, is not affiliated with Let's Go Washington, and did not bring Let's Go Washington's challenge, offered his own personal arguments about the language of I-645's PID. Ultimately, LGW's counsel was not permitted to argue the case because Judge Lanise threw out the PIID hearing, thus canceling the scheduled hearing in which LGW's arguments would be made. LGW's counsel characterized the procedure as unprecedented and objected to having an unrelated, non-lawyer litigant effectively address arguments that Let's Go Washington's own attorneys had prepared to make. Rather than subsequently allowing Let's Go Washington's scheduled arguments to proceed, the court concluded the matter without granting Let's Go Washington's requested rewrite. So in that case, and again, I mean, there's two issues here. You have an activist judge, unlike I have ever seen. And I was getting messages from lawyers like, this is bizarre behavior. And this is clearly activism from the bench. People saying, like, he needs to be reported to the court or to the bar, whatever it is. And I don't know if anything would come of that. Because again, Democrats control all the people who would look into things like that anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Bar associations, as activist as they come. But besides all that, I mean, for Arthur West, he should have declined weighing in on this specific language and said, Let's Go Washington, I'm not affiliated with them. They have a hearing on that later in the day. So in that sense, I fault him for doing that as well and kind of screwing it up for everyone. And Let's Go Washington should have had an opportunity on behalf of more than 500,000 Washingtonians who signed an initiative to repeal the income tax to make the legal argument themselves. But this is Washington State, where Democrats control everything. They control the courts, the low courts and the high courts. They control the Attorney General's office. They control the House and the Senate and the governor's office. They even control the Public Disclosure Commission. They control absolutely everything. So we think that we're going to get some sort of fair shake in all of this? And then even if voters can see past all the bullshit and in November pass the repeal, vote yes to repeal the income tax, what do you think will happen? They'll sue over it. Your own government, as they have many times before, will sue over your vote. They did it with $30 car tabs. They did it with the initiative that was just passed 2 years ago to protect natural gas. If they don't like how you vote, they will seek to overturn your vote. And then at the same time, they'll screech about how Donald Trump and Republicans are a threat to democracy. Well, they are the biggest threat to democracy there is, active and ongoing. And so is there any winning? I mean, Democrats designed this whole process to work out in their favor. And you think of how shady this is. All the court rulings over the last 100 years, all the votes of the people, 10 or 11, saying we don't want an income tax, the plain language in the state constitution that says you may not tax income in this way. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care about court rulings of the past before they controlled everything. They don't care about 10, 11 votes of the people. They don't care about the state constitution because they have all their cronies and allies in the right places to make sure that this ends up the way they want it to end up. And then they did the ultimate genius and tied millionaires to it to dupe the low information voters who will see that and say, well, I don't make $1 million a year, so this is no big deal to me. I don't want to lose funding for education and healthcare and all these things. So they've been thinking through this thing. I think I've said it before. They're playing 3D chess. Everybody else is just playing checkers. And they've thought through these things for 5-6 years on how to get to this exact moment for this exact outcome. And they don't work for you. They don't care how you vote. They don't care how you voted for the last 100 years. They want more money. They want more money for laser hair removal and boob jobs for transgender prison inmates. They want more money to pay for illegal aliens who are flooding our state because of sanctuary policies. They want more money for basically everything except the core functions of government. And even when they get more money for the core functions of government, like education and public safety gets worse and educational outcomes get worse. The more money they get, the worse they do. So look, I want to be optimistic, and it is in a sense, you know, I don't want to be doom and gloom. I want to give people something to believe that they can achieve and work towards. It's like a very underdog story that we're in right now. But I mean, these people have been plotting this for years, and everything is going exactly to plan for them, with the help of some activist judges like Chris Lanise, who should not be on the bench. All right, coming up next, the University of Washington has canceled a scheduled appearance from Hassan Piker. We'll discuss. First, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto, tech, but what if they're missing something? What if they're missing a big risk factor for your retirement portfolio? I recommend getting a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. He can talk about all those things, AI, crypto, tech, but also how energy can impact your retirement as well. Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much up side as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing, and you're talking about something as big as your hard-earned retirement. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast YouTube channel across social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast. All right, so I just learned this late last week. I had no idea that Hassan Piker, the far-left extremist commie, was scheduled to speak at the University of Washington. And his scheduled speech wasn't until, I believe, January 20-something of 2027. But here is the notice that the University of Washington had put out about it. Oh, it was January 21st, 2027. The Office of Public Lecture presents An Evening with Hassan Piker. I would rather have my eyeballs gouged out than spend an evening with Hassan Piker. But you know what I wouldn't do? I wouldn't berate the University of Washington into canceling it. I wouldn't show up and, you know, try to stop the event by being a violent radical extremist. I wouldn't try to crash the event and interrupt it. I think it's unhinged. But at the same time, I believe in free speech. And, you know, when Charlie Kirk came to the University of Washington, there's a lot of pressure from the far left radicals and threats of violence to try to get UW to cancel Charlie Kirk, and UW didn't cancel Charlie Kirk. Chloe Cole, the detransitioner, was going to have an event on campus, and it was because of death threats from far left radicals that she ended up postponing it, but UW was prepared to allow the event to go forward. Now, there are some people who disagree with me and were making quite the stink about Hassan Piker coming to the University of Washington. So UW announced over the weekend that they canceled the event. This is the statement that they put out. The University of Washington is dedicated to the free exchange of ideas, including on controversial topics and involving provocative speakers. After Hassan Piker was announced as a speaker for the 2026-2027 speaker series, there was a review of the process by which the event was planned. It was determined that the process for organizing this event did not meet the necessary level of rigor for university-hosted events in the speaker series. As a result, this event will not be held. Going forward, procedures will be updated to ensure the standards we have for university-hosted events like the speaker series are met, particularly so that we can help elevate the level of dialogue on divisive topics during a polarized time in our country. So they're not suggesting that they canceled it because Hassan Piker said America deserved 9/11 and abuses his dogs. There's a whole laundry list of extremist things that he said that maybe they could have canceled it over. They're saying that it wasn't organized correctly. I don't know if I believe that. You know, he's also very anti-Jewish. So they ended up canceling it. Now, some people are celebrating that decision. This is from JNS breaking: University of Washington cancels Hassan Piker event. Our friend, State Rep. Travis Couture, was quoted in this, said, obviously, universities are a place for First Amendment free speech, but someone who said that America deserves 9/11 and that capitalist blood should spill in the street should not be someone we are promoting with our tax dollars. He said, every elected official and taxpayer-funded organization should be asked to condemn socialism, communism, and democratic socialists of America and people like Hassan Piker. If they will not condemn those people, actions, and extreme ideology, then they should be disqualified from serving the people of Washington State. Now, there's a couple different thoughts there. Yeah, he's saying separately, you know, if you're a taxpayer-funded organization or if you're an elected official, you should condemn socialism, communism, and democratic socialists and people like Hassan Piker or be disqualified from serving the people of Washington State. I mean, that's a free speech issue. I disagree with him. I don't think that you would have to, as a Democrat, condemn Hassan Piker or forfeit your ability to be elected by people to serve. Now, do I think those are really, probably the most extreme political pundit in the country right now? Do I think his words are toxic and poisonous? 100%. But I believe in free speech. And again, if you had a situation where Charlie Kirk had been canceled and the university had given into that pressure, and maybe I'm forgetting an instance, you know, somebody was saying that Ben Shapiro was canceled, but look, Ben Shapiro wasn't scheduled to speak at UW. He spoke at a different Washington university and he was allowed to. So if there are some other examples that someone can give me of conservatives being canceled due to blowback, then I would feel a little bit differently about Hassan Piker being allowed to speak on campus. But absent any sort of examples like that, I mean, you're either all in or you're all out. Or else as a university, you get into this place where you have to decide whose speech is appropriate and whose speech is allowable and whose speech is too much. And if you don't want to play in that arena, then you shouldn't have a speaker series, or you should keep it like non-political, you know, historical, whatever it is, like have, you know, historians and celebrities or whatever you want, but you don't want to, they're already in this arena. So I don't like that it was canceled. I will say I don't like that it was canceled. Because if we're going to be able to have a free exchange of ideas on public universities, and that's what they've set themselves up for, then we can't, you know, complain when conservatives get canceled and then celebrate when someone like Hassan Piker gets canceled. Now, if it really was that there were some fundamental errors in the planning of the event and they didn't do things they were supposed to do, then maybe it's a different story. I don't know. That seems a little coincidental to me. That they've had this thing planned, and then all of a sudden news reports come out about it, and they cancel it. My understanding is a lot of members of the Jewish community in Seattle were not happy about this, and I wouldn't be happy about it either. So maybe there was some behind-the-scenes pressure. But one thing I'll say is, like, most conservatives value free speech. And again, we might not like that Hassan Piker gets to speak on a public campus, and it's going to be, you know, in part propped up with our taxpayer dollars. But I can tell you what we sure as hell are not going to do. We're not going to go, like I said, we're not going to go there and be violent. We're not going to call in or type in death threats. You know, we're not going to go into the event and try to stop it from happening because we have lives, we have jobs. And we're capable of saying, okay, if somebody's somewhere speaking words I disagree with that are really going to bother me, I'm just not going to go listen to them. Because if you can't be surrounded by words that you disagree with without going completely batshit crazy, then you probably shouldn't go to things like this. It's like the activists who are going to show up and protest Chloe Cole, a detransitioner. It's like, okay, if her words are really going to trigger you that much, just don't go. Don't go listen to them. So we'll see if more information comes out about this, but I don't think it's a win necessarily that he was canceled. I don't want to hear him speak. I think it's destructive to America's dialogue, and he's, you know, indoctrinating way too many kids on college campuses as it is, but we can't have it both ways. All right, Washington Democrats are surprised how much it's costing to support non-citizens. So this is from the Washington State Standard. $20 million in long-term care money for Washington immigrants to cover fewer than 200 people. Officials had hoped the money would stretch much further. Isn't that how it always works? Oh, we thought that this $20 million would go way further than it is. So this has to do with long-term care, right? And we have this long-term care program in Washington State that basically people were tricked into, and they've got money coming out of their paychecks for long-term care, even though the max benefit is like negligible. It was all a farce, and it was basically a gift to the unions, okay? So Washington lawmakers said, because of the big, beautiful bill, all of a sudden, there's all these non-citizens. And I'm saying non-citizens specifically because I don't believe that it's for illegal aliens. I could be wrong, but I think they're talking about refugees, asylees, and other people who are lawfully present non-citizens. So I want to make sure I make the distinction. Now, if I find out it's for illegals, that's a different situation. But it says Washington state lawmakers this year approved spending nearly $20 million to ensure immigrants here could retain long-term care insurance coverage they're set to lose under federal law. Legislators and advocates thought that money would put the state on a path to cover nearly 1,200 lawfully present non-citizens. It turns out it'll only be enough for 173. Okay, so they $20 million. And they're like, okay, this will cover 1,200 people here who are non-citizens but lawfully present for their long-term care needs. 1,200. Now they say it's only going to be enough for 173. Just to do the math for you for a second, and I'm sorry this math is on the fly. Remember what the max long-term care benefit that you're going to be eligible for after paying into the system your whole working life. It's like $30,000, right? Or something like that. So if we do the math here and say they set aside $20 million for non-citizens and it's only going to help 173 of them, that's more than $100,000 per non-citizen. So are the non-citizens getting three times more than you and I are going to get? Help me make the math work on that. Because I know that that's not how much we're getting each. Is that just part of that is the cost of the bureaucracy to make sure you're getting all this money out to the non-citizens? Lawmakers assumed the $20 million would cover about 300 people in the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th, 2027, before ramping up to the fall, with closer to $100 million per year in the next two-year budget, said Rep. Nicole McRee, a Democrat from Seattle. So they were $20 million wasn't even where it was going to end. They were going to add an additional $100 million every 2 years. So what is the reason they need this? So they blame the big, beautiful bill that congressional Republicans passed last year, said it cuts Medicaid coverage for most non-citizens. So, and that's why I say it's specific. And I don't doubt that our long-term care program is going to illegal aliens. I don't doubt that because in our state, we treat citizens like illegal aliens. But this is specific to Medicaid coverage that the federal government had allowed for non-citizens that it no longer allows for many of them under President Donald Trump. So state officials projected 14,000 people in Washington would lose coverage as a result of that starting October 1st, and 1,500 of them are non-citizens. So that's basically where this extra money was supposed to go. And we're in a budget crisis, remember? We're in a budget crisis where they're like, oh, we have to have all these cuts. But now you're telling me $20 million will only help provide long-term care for 173 people? Like, where is all that money going? Or are you really giving each of them roughly $110,000 for long-term care, which is way more than those of us paying into the long-term care program get? It's all a grift, people. It's all a grift. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, we have been telling our viewers for years now to take the First Mark Challenge and have them just give a second look to your insurance needs. Because I think insurance is one of these places we just set it and forget it. It's like, I got my insurance with so-and-so. They renew it every year. I don't really think about it. And then you get a renewal and it's like way up. And you're like, what the hell happened here? Well, you need to make sure you're with a company that's doing proactive reviews of your insurance every single year and looking for ways to save you and your family money. They do that with Mike and I every year. This year, they saved us $2,000. We didn't even have to lift a finger. We were like, oh my gosh, this is why we're with First Mark. I use First Mark insurance for my personal needs, for my business needs. And I just cannot say enough about them. You pick up the phone if you need them. Like, I was about to get sued one time and I had to call on my business plans and it was like one ring. Hey, who is it? Oh, Brandy, good to hear from you. And I'm like, see, that's what I need out of insurance company. I don't want to call someone in Timbuktu who doesn't know anything about me and my life. So First Mark Insurance is fantastic. And the First Mark Challenge is free. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, I'm torn. Morally, I am torn. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so there is a lot of momentum in the effort to protect girls' sports and women's sports. And a lot of that started right here in Seattle when we held a rally outside the Storm Fever game. Those rallies have now spread in support of Sophie Cunningham, who came out in support of protecting girls' sports and girls' spaces. Since then, you've had some other notable athletes, like some of the best women's tennis players in the world, come out saying, yeah, I mean, tests to determine biological sex is probably a good idea. And so it has just created this wave of momentum. And all of it, of course, in our state at least, leading up to November when you get a chance to vote yes to protect girls' sports here. And that's why I care about it so much. Now, one of the things I've said during this whole mission we've been on for like 3 years is, you know, maybe it's just going to take some men taking one for the team, putting on a wig and signing up for women's sports and just absolutely crushing all the women and girls and showing why it is so stupid to pretend that like gender isn't real and biology isn't real and sex isn't real and just say, oh, if you say you're a man or if you say you're a girl, you can play. So I've been saying that for a couple years now, and I suddenly have my wish. So over the weekend, two former NBA stars came out and said they are going to make themselves available for the WNBA draft. One of them is Inez Kanter Freedom. He's a Turkish-American. He's a very well-known human rights activist. Former, was he a first round? But was it first in the first round or third in the first round? It was one of those. First round NBA pick, absolute massive star. And he said, look, I want to play in the WNBA.
I am officially declaring myself a WNBA prospect. If simply declaring who you are is all that's required, then I meet every single requirement necessary to compete in the WNBA. My team and I have carefully examined the WNBA's eligibility criteria and governing framework surrounding self-identification and inclusion. Based on the current guidelines, I can and am officially declaring my eligibility for the upcoming WNBA draft in May 2027. I am definitely not here to mock, make fun of, or disrespect any community or personal choices. I am simply asking that the current rules be applied equally to everyone. The rules that represent the very values many WNBA players and coaches have publicly advocated for. My team and I are prepared to ensure these guidelines are applied equally, consistently, and without exception. And I look forward to the WNBA honoring its stated principles. See you at training camp.
I love that he's a Nike check crossed out on his sweatshirt. He couldn't find a different sweatshirt, so he crossed out the Nike check. Now, when this came out, I'm like, this is awesome. This is the way. This is what we have to do. And he's a well-known, as I said, human rights advocate. And it seems like from the video that what he really wants to do is force the WNBA's hand. Like, he doesn't really want to play in the WNBA. He wants to force their hand to have to draw a line and say, okay, yeah, okay, we get it. Men can't play. You got to be a biological woman. And so he says until they do that, he's going to push forward. So he, over the weekend, just signed his declaration of intent for the 2027 WNBA draft. He said, please accept this formal document as my official written notification to the Women's National Basketball Association of my voluntary decision to enter the player pool for the 2027 WNBA draft. Consistent with the current league collective bargaining agreement, I am submitting this notice to exercise my draft rights and to affirm that I am at least 22 years old and that I have no remaining intercollegiate eligibility. So it's like just all by the book, right? Hey, I'm entering the WNBA draft. Now, at that point, and I will admit, I know that it's my job to give my opinions for a living and that when I take a strong position, I shouldn't back away from it. And so I was kind of loving that because it's something I'd called for. But then things started to get a little bit silly and messy. So a second former NBA player, Royce White, who's now a Republican candidate for Senate in Minnesota, he'd ran for Senate in Minnesota and lost 2024, I believe. Now he's running again. Now he says he, too, wants to play in the WNBA.
I'm transgender. I'm a woman. I identify sometimes as a woman for purposes of basketball, professional basketball. So I'll be declaring for the WNBA draft in 2027 as well. I think I'd be unstoppable, but I'm a team first guy. I'm a pass first kind of player. I do the little things. I led my team in all five major stat categories at Iowa State University. So I do a little bit of everything. I'll do whatever the coach needs me to do. I'll do whatever the girls need me to do. I think the WNBA could come out and make a definitive statement about guys with a pair of balls playing in the Women's Association. But hey, that'd be probably too much like right. So, and I don't want to be discriminated against. No, I want fair treatment. I'm a black. I'm a young black, hopefully United States Senator. That would like a fair chance to participate as a sometimes identifying as a transgender woman athlete.
And then he took things a step further, donned a wig, calls himself Roisha White. Is that how you pronounce that? Horrible wig, by the way. Horrible wig. And look, it's funny. I get it. But I almost think, and then you had other men online, like putting on wigs and poorly applied lipstick and going out to shoot some hoops and being like, I'm going to play in the WNBA too. What I don't want it to become is like such a mockery that you offend reasonably minded people. Because I've said from the beginning, if this becomes about attacking the trans kids or trans athletes or whatever it is, I think that we lose. And I'm thinking of this from a position of Washington State's electorate being very progressive and being probably sensitive to those things. And I don't know that that convinces them. I think that they'll look at that and say, well, now you're making a mockery out of an issue that's sensitive. And, there are people who are trans and just want to enjoy sports. And now you're making fun of them. So I'm really torn now. This thing I thought would be a good idea, I think had it just ended at Ines Cantor Freedom, who was very matter of fact about it and said, I don't want to disrespect anyone, but they need to come out and make a statement. Now it's this Royce guy who's, running for Senate, who's become more of a political figure than a sports figure, and he's donning wigs and stuff. And I just don't see it anymore as being particularly effective. Because remember who we have to convince in this moment. We have to convince people who are on the fence. Like, we have to convince people who, could take or leave this issue, who might not think it's that big of a deal, at least in Washington, if we want to get the initiative passed in November. So try to put yourself in the mindset of those people and ask yourself if this helps. I don't think it does. And I don't want to lose sight of the stories of real girls and women who have lost opportunities to real boys and men. Because there are so many examples of that, and we have had their stories on this show. And so I almost think focusing on these, men who are joking about being women will make people feel like, who maybe are low-information voters, oh, they don't even have any real examples, so now they've got to manufacture examples. And we're just handing them straw men. It's literal straw men. So the media can say, oh, this is just ridiculous, as opposed to focusing on the real stories of women and girls who have been hurt. So I've sort of changed my position on it. I'm open to you guys dissenting, as always, and I realize that's a real quick turnabout. But once I saw it happening, I'm sort of like, ugh, it gives me a kind of ick feeling. I'm not sure I particularly like it. Now, that being said, the WNBA commissioner came out and said they're going to have a meeting and they're going to discuss all this. This is from The Athletic. WNBA commissioner stresses integrity, respect on topic of transgender athletes in league-wide memo. So it was a memo sent to team presidents, general managers, and coaches on Friday by the WNBA commissioner, Kathy Engelbert. She advised the league's leaders on their approach to the topic of transgender participation in women's sports. The commissioner stressed approaching it with integrity and respect without specifically defining the league's stance. She said, quote, first, we will always approach this topic thoughtfully, respectfully, and in alignment with the longstanding values of our league. She said, second, our player eligibility rules, unlike the eligibility rules of some other leagues and governing bodies, are collectively bargained. Lastly, preserving the integrity of our game and ensuring fair competition will always remain among the league's highest priorities. So look, maybe you're of the mindset, and I can understand this, that Brandy, we've tried the nice, reasonable way. We've tried to tell, I mean, we've had these girls on our show before there was even an initiative to protect girls' sports. You know, going back, what, 3 years now? We've told their stories. It's been out there. And we haven't got any traction on the issue. But I mean, I really feel like in the last 2 weeks, we have got a lot of traction and a lot of attention to the issue. And so now I'm worried that it's almost going a little too far in the sort of jokey realm and poke fun realm. And then, of course, the Sophie Cunningham saga continues. So she was, the Fever were playing in Chicago. And of course, Sophie has come out in support of girls' sports. And there was another pro-Sophie rally outside. So I can't play the video because of copyright issues, but I can show you just some still images. You've probably seen the video anyway. But she was essentially clotheslined by Dejounte Carrington of the Chicago Sky. So referees ended up upgrading the foul to a flagrant two. Carrington was rejected. Cunningham got free throws. And it was bad. I mean, Sophie, it was clearly intentional. I don't know how anybody could watch that and say it wasn't intentional. And Sophie Cunningham was bleeding from the mouth afterward. And I know that some people are like, well, Sophie Cunningham's roughed some people up on the court. Yeah, she has. Remember like the infamous clip of Caitlin Clark got like, I don't know, poked in the eye or something. And then Sophie very intentionally took this girl down during a layup. But she didn't claim it was an accident. She was very clear she was doing it intentionally and she took the punishment for it. Unlike Dejounte Carrington, who has said, oh, this is white privilege of, or, you know, all the responses that she's getting. This was the Sports Illustrated headline. Sophie Cunningham got a bitter taste of karma after drawing flagrant foul in Fever Sky game. So first of all, when that came out, I think all of us, and I, you know, definitely to me, it sounded like they were saying she got a bitter taste of karma for her comments about protecting girls' sports, because that's what she's been in the headlines for. And I don't know if that was their intention in writing that, but it definitely sounded like, oh, she got karma for all being Mega Barbie or whatever it is. And so they were just eviscerated for it. And this is what they changed the headline to. Sophie Cunningham's enforcer role gets reversed onto her with hard foul in Fever Sky game. So if that's what they intended, I understand. She has absolutely had some flagrant fouls on the court. But unlike her, I mean, she hasn't, unlike her attacker, she didn't deny that they were intentional. And then this was just drove me nuts. So the Fever coach, so Sophie Cunningham's own coach, Stephanie White, came out and defended Sophie's attacker.
One of the things about Nay is that she's going to play her butt off, man. She's going to compete. Nobody's going to go walking in for a layup. And so I don't oppose the hard foul.
What?
But I also don't think that she intentionally went for the net.
I don't oppose the hard foul. But I don't think she intentionally. So she's saying, oh, I mean, maybe she should have got it. I don't think she intentionally went for the neck. How could you watch that and think anything other than it being intentional? And that it happened to your own player. As the coach, you should have your players back. And be like, yeah, that was bad. She's bleeding from the face. Outrageous. And good thing it didn't happen in Florida. I just thought this was funny. James Uthmeyer, the Florida Attorney General, said the WNBA knows better than to play games down here in Florida because I'll be charging people with assault. Yeah, and then that Dejounte, or whatever her name is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, she called it white privilege that Sophie Cunningham that she got like a flagrant foul and ejected because it was on a white girl. It's just absolutely the victim mentality of these people is outrageous. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, do you support former NBA players entering the WNBA draft? Yes or no? All right. You got this, Nicole? Let's see. Nicole, what do you think? Yes or no?
I guess I agreed with you before. I think it had to be done in order to get the point across. Yeah. But you're right. I don't think it should be taken quite as silly as it has become with the wig. And I'm just doing this for this and whatever. So I like the idea of the France guy coming over to play because he actually lives as a transgender person. So, but, you know, I guess it's keeping the momentum going by doing this. So I agree with that.
I liked Inez when it was just Inez because he seemed to really be coming at it from a place of like, I'm fighting for women when I'm doing this.
And he worked hard, like the set that he was on.
Yes,
I mean, they worked on that.
Yeah, and then the Royce guy, I think he's kind of a troll from my understanding of him. And I don't think that he's coming across as genuine in it.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys are probably like, Brandy, when she gets to become such a wuss, but I'm thinking about optics. I'm thinking about winning an election and initiative. So 97% of you guys say yes. You support it to make a point. Yeah,
that's 97%. Actually even more than I thought it would be.
Linda said, if that's what it takes to put an end to this insanity. Jen said, absolutely. I love seeing these men stick up for women. It's about time. And don't get me wrong. I love seeing them stick up for women, too. And I do believe at some point this had to reach its natural conclusion. And so maybe this is the natural conclusion of absurdity, where everybody gets called on their absurdity and then, you know, they decide, are we going to give in or are we going to stick to our guns? Vicky said Trump said he'd buy a team and ask LeBron to join it. Yes. I mean, that is what I've said. Like, do any of you want to play against LeBron James? Of course not. And I'm sorry, both of these guys would smoke them by size alone.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Aztec Sun God said, this just proves I'm an a-hole. Totally agree. No, you're not an a-hole. Look, it was my opinion like 5 days ago. And I'm telling you guys, I sort of reversed course after watching it all play out in real time. Jill said, definitely. And I'm center left. How is what Coco Gauff said different than what from Sophie Cunningham said? Yeah, Coco, the famous tennis star, she basically said what Sophie said, but she's not getting the same hate. And I think it's because she's black, honestly, and she's being treated differently. Let's see. Matt says, apparently to fight the absurd, you have to be absurd. It's ridiculous on its face, but this is going to require the WNBA to define what a woman is in the collective bargaining agreement. Clearly trying to have a rational conversation did not work. And now we have entered bizarro world to just be heard. Yeah, I don't know. It's all messy. I just want to keep up the momentum we have with getting these girls' stories heard and, you know, moving right along would be just great. All right. Where am I, Nicole, in the show? I don't even know anymore. Yeah. Oh, okay. Great. All right. Thank you. Coming up next, AGs across the country plotted to sue Trump before Trump was even in office, according to a new memo obtained by the Center Square. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They can help you on an individual basis in a lot of ways, screening forms, keeping up to date with all the changing rules and regulations. And then they have events all year long that are pretty fun, if you don't mind me saying so. You know, I don't want to tell on them, but drinking is often part of these events, and it's very fun, but also informative and engaging at the same time. I think I have an event for them I'm speaking at about media and how the media covers housing policy, etc. And then also they're taking on legal battles to ensure private property rights. So it's a good reason to join and support the organization, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, we kind of knew that this happened, but I guess, you know, knowing that it happened in black and white is a different thing. So the Center Square got its hands on a confidential memo that was basically encouraging attorney generals across the country during the 2024 presidential election to sign on to a promise that they would sue Donald Trump if he was elected again. From the Center Square, Democrat AGs planned to sue Trump nearly 7 months before he was reelected. You know what this also tells me is they just knew that Trump was going to win. And this was before Joe Biden dropped out, but they probably, like, the writing was on the wall. Joe Biden was old and feeble. There was a debate about whether he was going to be in or out. And they're probably like, all right, Trump's going to win. So we have to start our strategy for trying to sue him over every single thing he does. But it's also just, I mean, these people work for taxpayers. This is what they're doing before a presidential election is even decided. So it says nearly two dozen state attorneys general banded together as early as April 2024 to plot litigation against President Donald Trump long before he was reelected, according to a confidential document obtained by the Center Square. The document was signed approximately 3 months before Joe Biden exited the race and Vice President Kamala Harris became the nominee for president. It was signed nearly 7 months before Trump was reelected by 2.3 million more votes than Harris, and almost 9 months before he was even inaugurated. State attorneys have sued the Trump administration nearly 100 times since January 2025. They say the coordinated effort appears to have a nickname, the Project for Federal Accountability. So again, 9 months before the guy's even sworn in, they're launching in secret the Project for Federal Accountability. They don't even know what they need to hold him accountable for yet. He hasn't even done anything yet. He hadn't even been elected yet. Outrageous. So a lot of the lawsuits, and they looked at, you know, the people who signed the letter versus how many of them have actually made good and sued, et cetera. So they say not all the lawsuits have been joined by each attorney general, and some offices take the lead on different cases. At last count, California Attorney General Rob Bonta has participated in 82 lawsuits. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser has joined at least 75 lawsuits. Washington State Attorney General Brown has joined 70 lawsuits, followed by Arizona Attorney General Chris Mayes at 46 lawsuits. So we are in the top three, and it's not even particularly close. Let's see here. Former Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who is now our governor, announced one day after the election that his office had already been preparing potential litigation against Trump for months. And that is true. And that's why I say that we kind of knew that this was coming, because he said, like, after Trump won and Bob Ferguson was still the AG, he's like, and then he became the governor, he's like, oh, we've been getting ready for a Trump 2.0. And we've been preparing possible litigation before the man even does anything. And they're spending tens of millions of dollars, probably hundreds of millions of dollars at this point, on those politically motivated lawsuits. Here's a map that the Center Square sort of plotted to help you understand what states joined and which didn't. And again, the document they obtained was called Privileged and Confidential Common Interest Agreement. At least 22 Democratic attorney generals appeared to have signed it. No Republicans signed it. Although there have been a couple of Republican states who have sued the Trump administration, three of them, but they were not part of this sort of collective agreement, obviously. And then there's three attorney generals who won't say whether they were part of the agreement at all, Oregon, Virginia, and Wisconsin, but I have to believe Oregon probably was. So it's your typical far left culprits. And it just shows, like, this is all political. They weren't interested in seeing what policies he actually put through and then deciding whether it was worthy of a lawsuit. They wanted to sue, derail him at every single step. And I wouldn't say they've derailed him at every step, but many of those lawsuits have been successful, in part because of activist judges. All right, man, this angered me yesterday. So AOC is clearly running for president in 2028, very clearly. I don't think it's a question anymore at all that she's running for president, which just terrifies me. Would I rather have AOC or Gavin Newsom? God, it might be AOC, because Gavin Newsom's horrible. But she was on with ABC's Jonathan Carl, and she is now trying to do what people who want to run for president try to do. They try to moderate their views. They try to act like things they said in the past they don't really believe anymore. And that is what, and so now as she's gearing up to run for president, there's all these crazy cuckoo lefty candidates out there, and she's being asked about some of their past comments. And she's basically saying, oh, none of us believe any of that anymore.
What do you make of those controversial statements? I'm sure you've seen. I mean, she's, you know, the Thanksgiving dust up. Mm-hmm. She says she doesn't, you know, still believe that. But, you know, the abolished prisons, abolished police, which mm-hmm. is also positions that have been taken by a lot of the progressive candidates who have won.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get around that?
Yeah. I mean,
those are not positions that are supported by
right. I mean, I think that a lot of these races, even right now, they'll have a tendency to be nationalized.
Yeah.
But these races ultimately are local, and all politics are local. My understanding is that that Francesca Hong has made clear her present stances to her electorate.
Yeah, she's moved away from a lot
of that. Right, she's moved away from it. And I have a local city councilman that has this saying woke one was crazy.
Woke one was crazy. Okay, that's
and, true. And I think that what's important is that we have to assess what
was it. I mean, did the movement go too far with some of those positions? I mean, you briefly supported the idea of defunding the police.
Well, you know, I think that during this time and especially during COVID, there was a huge opening of the Overton window. We were shut down. There was some of the highest unemployment rates that we have seen because of those shutdowns.
Yeah.
And I think that the doors were really open in trying to entertain any and every policy that was going to get us to a better place. And I actually think that the discussions that were had in that time were quite fruitful. I think that when we talk about crime today, it's fundamentally different than the way that we talked about crime in bringing crime down, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we all share in the goals of having as low a crime rate as possible. I think that,
do you?
You know, during lockdown, of course, rhetoric in that time is not rhetoric that we would use today. And I'm grateful that these candidates have the opportunity to present who they are to their electorate and what they're campaigning on in this moment.
How convenient is that? Oh, they don't believe in that anymore. Oh, they put us all through hell. They don't believe in that anymore. Let's focus in on two parts of this. One is obviously the maniacal laugh.
I have a local city councilman that has this saying, woke one was crazy.
Ha ha ha. No, you don't get to do that. You do not get to do that. Woke one was crazy. Ha 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 ha. Woke one ruined people's lives. Woke one cost people their livelihoods. You called us racists and conspiracy theorists. I mean, you called for, you know, you called anyone who disagreed with you fascists. You called for government control of speech over people who didn't want a COVID vaccine. You called people election deniers. And now she just gets to a couple years later laugh it off like, oh, wasn't that crazy? Without any sort of apology? And look, I'm all for people coming around and growing. Lord knows I have. I've taken positions in the past that I am deeply embarrassed about. But absent any sort of real reflection about what woke one, the 2020 era, did to people's lives and to the country, I don't want your fake laughter about it. You don't get to dismiss it that easy. You have to be, and you see Jonathan Carl too. He loves it. Oh, that's so funny. Woke one. He tries to ask her what kind of question about it. But unless you're going to come through and you're going to specifically state, here's why I no longer support police defunding. Here's why that was a bad and destructive idea. Here's what, I mean, we just went through the Fauci thing with the Fauci diaries. They haven't walked back anything on COVID. They haven't apologized for the overreach. For people whose lives and livelihoods were destroyed, you don't just get to laugh it off. If you want to be taken seriously and you have had a genuine change of heart, which I do not believe you have, but if you've had a genuine change of heart, apologize to people, be specific about what statements you or what positions you held that you no longer hold. And then she had this comment there at the end that bothered me equally.
Rhetoric in that time is not rhetoric that we would use today.
Yes, it is. Rhetoric has gotten worse. What rhetoric of that time don't you use today? I mean, you're out there calling, and I say you as in the radical left, calling ICE agents Gestapo, calling Trump, comparing Trump to Hitler as fascist. Your rhetoric hasn't toned down on people you disagree with politically. If anything, it has ramped up. And again, you haven't apologized for any of it. I mean, you're not out in the streets calling for police defunding anymore, but you are calling to defund ICE. And Democrats did block DHS funding. And you're calling ICE agents Nazis. So is it really all that different? And again, you get into low information voter and they'll start to believe some of this. Like, oh, so Francesca Hong is the likely nominee for governor in Wisconsin on the Democratic side. And she said wild stuff. Like, oh, Thanksgiving is racist and struggling because she has a son who's like half white and she struggles with the proximity to whiteness because of her son. Like, that's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. She hasn't come out and explained in detail why those things she said were totally unacceptable and why she regrets them. At least when I've changed my opinion, I've thrown myself at your mercy to try to make you understand why. Just outrageous. So AOC, we'll have more from AOC in our closing sanity check because she was full of doozies. And look, the more she talks, the more she's going to go the way of Kamala Harris. I mean, the problem with Kamala Harris is when she opened her mouth. And that's the problem with AOC as well. So even if she runs for president, hopefully most people are going to be able to see beyond these fake, oh, I'm not like that anymore. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, thinking about selling your home, maybe moving out of state. I don't know if you guys saw this. I should have pulled the image. There was a picture of a U-Haul driving eastbound on I-90 that had a big middle finger on, somebody like put up a sign on the back of it with a big middle finger and it said, bye, Katie, or thanks, Katie, like Katie Wilson. It's just crazy. Anyway, if you're thinking about leaving the state, whether you do or do not put a middle finger on the back of your U-Haul, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are the best in the business. They really are. By all means, talk to a few real estate agents. Ask them what they have to offer. And I think at the end of the day, you'll go with Wes and his team because they offer services you're not going to find anywhere else. And they make it super easy. So first, you reach out. They give you a free market analysis. Hey, here's what the market's doing right now in your area. Here's what you can expect. Here's what we need to put into your house to make sure we get top possible dollar out of it. And then they can come in with their listing boost concierge service, which is basically like, hey, we're taking all this over, taking all the stress off your plate. We'll do some cosmetic upgrades if necessary. Come in, do some staging and really make this listing stand out, which when you have a market that's just absolutely flooded right now, your listing has to stand out. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to some comments from the live stream, shall we? On the activists, if you joining us, Nicole? Sure. On sure. The activist, we both look very blonde today for some reason.
Yeah, that sun bleaching hair.
Hair is a little frizzy today, to be honest, but I can't be perfect every day. I can't. I try.
It's allowed. You're allowed.
On the activist judge going on his anti-initiative rant, he said 100% agree. We need to stop the crazy no matter what side it is. Independent thinkers unite. And people get mad whenever I'm like, especially my Republican friends, like, why do you keep saying you don't care about the Republican Party? Look, they're a means to an end. That's all it is. It's a means to an end to one party rule. And to that extent, like, I have a lot of Republicans I like, a lot of Republican politicians we consider friends of the show, but it's not about trying to get advances for a political party that I'm not even a member of. It's trying to save the state by making sure Democrats can't just make any sort of decision without any checks and balances.
Right. Average Joe says, WASP Supreme Court has proven again and again that they do not care about the Constitution.
Yeah, it's just, and there's 5 seats on the Supreme Court that'll be on your ballot in November. So make sure we're researching those.
Pay attention and share with your people.
Yes, you have to share with people. I know it might be weird, but do a text blast out to your friends like, hey, vote yes on all the initiatives and here's the best state Supreme Court candidates.
And if nothing else, tell people to vote. Who's not voting? I mean, way too many people are not voting. Tell people to vote.
All right, Necro Two Shoes, there should be no activist judges at all, not even tiny bitty ones. This was like a blatant activist statement in the middle of arguments. Oh, we're going to continue the progressive spiral or the regressive tax spiral. It's like, oh, gee, I wonder how this guy's going to rule. Just, and he's
the hand movement,
waving his hand, and he keeps like jumping out of his seat, like he's just can't wait to interrupt and inject his opinion. Outrageous.
And Sun Miller says, went to the Jamie Peterson School of Hand Motions.
Yes. Now, look, I'm very handsy as well, but I'm not a judge.
And that was a little bit, that was more than that. But your screenshot that you posted was so
He was like yelling. It was so weird. I'm sure I'm going to get some letter from him being like, I'm suing you for defamation for suggesting I was on narcotics. I didn't. I said I would never suggest that a member of the court was on narcotics. I just said you're exhibiting the behavior of people I have seen on narcotics. Mm-hmm. Very different. On UW canceling Hassan Piker, Elemental says, literally the best thing to counter Hassan is to let him talk. Yeah, very much like AOC and Kamala Harris. Just let him talk. And hopefully people will understand that they're full of it.
Yeah. T-Man says the difference is political guest speakers are are hosted by students who without taxpayer dollars. This was a UW public universities should be neutral, but students should be able to be free to host whoever.
Interesting.
They want.
So I'd have to look at all those to see if it was in both cases student groups inviting them. I know the Charlie Kirk one was. So I guess maybe there might be a finite difference there. And yeah. I understand what you're saying.
Although so it seems like they were saying, hey, there could have been a process that this could have happened, but
right.
it can't now. But I mean, it was supposed to be in January. So you'd think if they really wanted it to yeah. happen, they would have given them the proper
like, hey, here's a chance to redo to it. Yeah, I think they got a lot of blowback. And Hassan Piker got in his live stream and blamed the Jews, of course, mm-hmm. which is who we always blame. So. All right, on Washington Democrats surprised how much it costs to support non-citizens, Underground Fly says time to investigate the long-term care facilities. Yeah, roughly $10,000 per non-citizen for long-term care? Make sense.
Looking Up for Jesus says, I love the oxymoron, lawfully present illegals. Yeah. Sanctuary policy is at their finest.
Yeah.
And I wonder, because you don't ask people for any proof, right? So how do they prove
that? Well, so our state dollars are definitely mm-hmm. going to illegals. That's not even a question, right? But the federal dollars are what they've blocked that the state is now trying to come in and compensate, which means that in theory, those people would be double dipping, wouldn't it? I don't know. Maybe that's not how it works. But like, so you're getting long-term care funds from the federal government now.
Well, I think they're allowing those people to come over here and ask. But how do they prove that those people were asked over there?
Right. Interesting. I'm not sure. On the WNBA, maybe. Feeling the heat, possibly. RM Calm says the WNBA may self-implode before too long. Maybe this is the hill they'll die on.
Well, I mean, their ticket sales are sky high. So,
well, yeah,
I mean,
at their Fever Games. That's
comes down afterwards.
At the Fever Games?
I think even not at the Fever Games. They've increased sales. But I think that's just because people are going to, like, show support for the league right now. Like, those people that do support them. But that'll die off.
Yeah, hopefully.
In theory.
All right, you want to do Julie Kennedy.
Julie says, fighting ridiculous with ridiculous.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Look, I'm struggling with it. I'm being honest with you. Tanya, I think in a big way, they were not trying to be jokey, but they were trying to stick up for Sophie, who was clearly going it alone. And that's possible. Maybe. I think Inez's intentions are good. I'm not sure about the Royce guy. I've read some kind of shady things about him. Like his ex-wife has like a 50-year-long restraining order against him or something.
He also
wants
to get elected. So it was free publicity, right?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure. All right, you want to round us out?
Deep Blue, the WNBA is based in New York. They will have to follow New York state law when deciding if they know what a woman is.
Well, it says, will they have to follow? I don't know. I don't know if they'd have to follow New York state law because they're not like a public entity, you know, they're a private entity. And so businesses can make individual decisions for themselves.
Yeah,
can they not?
It's a law or policy, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I don't think that would be the case. Their collective bargaining agreement already says that only women can play. But the key is, what do you mean by that? Do you mean your version of women, which is anyone who says they're a woman, or do you mean biological women? So that is... Unfortunately, we've got to
TBD.
Suss that out, okay? We've got to suss
that
out.
But I think that's the next game, right? In New York?
Yes. Yes. So there'll be a protest. Mm-hmm. Or not a protest. It's a rally. Pro-Sophie rally outside the game in New York. I'm going to try to get to another one because I don't think the Fever are back in Seattle this season. And what are we going to do when the season's over? We've got to. Momentum.
Yeah,
All right. Nicole, thank you. Mm-hmm. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, sorry to do this, but we got to talk about AOC again. So she's doing a little vlog, that's a video blog for those of you who aren't hip like her, about the fact that she's chosen to freeze her eggs.
Don't be weird about this.
You don't be weird.
No, I know all of you will be. All right, everyone. Declan and I, day one of freezing my eggs. I'm diving into the process, and now I've got... Let's see, all of this medicine here.
All right, maybe unpopular. On its face, I'm fine with this. Like, look, she's about my age. If she's deciding that she wants to freeze her eggs and that's what she needs to do at this point in her life and she's uncertain about motherhood, and I'm sure, and this is something a lot of women do and struggle with and go through, so if she can be a voice for them, I'm really fine with it on its face. It doesn't bother me. The problem is that about, 7 years ago, AOC was pretending to cry on stage at a summit about how climate change was going to end the world and dash her dreams of motherhood.
We don't have to project 1 minute into our future to see that the climate crisis is already here. On this note, I speak to you not as an elected official or public figure, but I speak to you as a human being, a woman whose dreams of motherhood now taste bittersweet because of what I know about our children's future. And that our actions are responsible for bringing their most dire possibilities into focus.
Okay, if 7 years ago you were saying the world's going to end, so why even be a mom? And now you're like, I'm going to wait even longer to have kids. Like, wouldn't that mean that you're going to, there's going to be even more of a likelihood that your children are living in this doomsday scenario that you've created in your mind? And I think what really bothers me is how many young women were convinced not to have children because of the doomsaying of people like AOC during that period of time, and other Democrats and progressives who basically said the world is going to end, and people who were scared into thinking that they would be bringing their children into an apocalypse. And now they're, you know, maybe too old to even have kids. And now she's like freezing her eggs so she can still have kids. So that's what bothers me about it. It's insane. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate every single one of you. As always, we do have a tiny bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers who give up $5 of their hard-earned money every month to make this show possible. If you'd like to join them, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show, and then you'll join our growing community of sane people who are just fighting to make the state a little bit better in any way that we can. Let's see. Any housekeeping? I don't think so. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.